Chapter 15. So Darkness I Became.
Will you still love me when I'm no longer young and beautiful? Will you still love me when I got nothing but my aching soul? I know you will. I know you will. I know that you will. Will you still love me when I'm no longer beautiful?
Walking into the high security holding cells beneath the Jedi Temple felt a little like walking into a thick fog. If fog could get inside your skin and twist around your soul like spiderweb. Quinlan couldn't help his wince as he strode past the two silent temple guards at the entrance, laying his palm on the security scanner and waiting for the door to slide open. It was worse inside. He had to stop after the door had closed behind him to catch his breath, trying to get enough of a grip on the Force to calm himself. He had trained Force Blind as a Padawan, all Jedi did, but he had never actually had to exercise that training, even during his shadow missions. And this was just out in the corridor. Quinlan couldn't imagine how it actually felt inside one of those holding cells. Lumas ignited on either side of him as he strode down the corridor. The cells flanking the hallway were all empty, unused for decades, maybe even centuries. Jedi did not turn to the dark side very often, and those that did seldom allowed themselves to be taken alive. Quinlan couldn't remember the last time it had happened, out of living memory of all but Yoda and Thrasa, perhaps. The deeper in Quinlan got, the more oppressive it felt. He had to force himself to keep walking out of the fear that if he stopped again, he might turn and run in the opposite direction. For a moment, he had the image of himself banging at the locked door, begging the temple guards to let him out, and being refused. But it wasn't him the guards were here for. The only occupied cell was down at the far end, the shields on the door glowing like a torch amidst the darkness of the long corridor. Unlike the empty cells, the wards on this one were active and freshly reinforced by the most powerful consular Jedi in the Order. Quinlan could barely stand in front of the door without flinching. It took all his strength to lay his hand on the scanner and wait for the door to slide open. Inside was a small, empty space, and beyond that, a humming ray shield between the door and the rest of the cell. Obi-Wan Kenobi was lying on his back on the cot inside, one arm thrown up to cover his eyes. "Hey," Quinlan said. Obi-Wan moved his arm and lifted his head enough to see him, then sat up slowly, swinging his legs over the side of the cot and rubbing his hands over his face. Quinlan could see the effect being inside the false-smelling wards was having on him. He looked drawn and tired, older than his years. Even his bruises looked deeper and darker, as though they had stopped healing since he had been brought to the temple. "Hey," he said, his voice a little rough. "Come to gloat?" "What in blazes do I have to gloat about?" Quinlan asked. "You look terrible, Kenobi." "How charming. Insults. Because I hadn't gotten enough of those already." "It wasn't an insult, it was an observation," Quinlan said. He glanced around, looking for somewhere to sit, and eventually resigned himself to sitting tailor-style on the floor. The space was meant for extra guards, but apparently the Order had decided that the two outside the holding cells were enough for now. "I didn't even know this place was here." "Surprise," Obi-Wan said dryly. "Neither did I." He pointed at something on the wall opposite him. "Graffiti from the new Sith Wars. I think that was the last time someone was in here." Quinlan peered at it, but at this angle, he couldn't make out more than a scrawl of Autobesh characters.
"What's it say?"
Sounding bored, Obi-Wan said,
"Death to the Jedi, long live the Sith. Same old, same old. Nothing interesting."
"I wonder what happened to him."
Obi-Wan stared at the wall for a moment, then turned back to Quinlan.
He opened his wrists with his teeth, he said. Or that's what the last thing written here says he was going to do.
Quinlan flinched.
Indeed, Obi-Wan said, his lips curving up for a moment in a bitter smile. I'm beginning to understand the urge.
He rubbed his thumb over the vein on his right wrist, seemed to realize what he was doing, and dropped both hands into his lap.
So, what can I do for you, Quinn, since you're not here to gloat?
He hesitated for an instant.
Did Her Highness...
Quinlan shook his head, feeling some of Obi-Wan's hope pushed through the fog of the Force.
If the Temple has had any word from Naboo, I haven't heard about it, he said. They're not even telling the Supreme Chancellor you're here. That we're here, I mean. The Task Force is still supposed to be back with the Flotilla.
Obi-Wan rubbed his hand over his face.
Ancestors protect me, he said bitterly. Dooku would have been reasonable. The Council won't be.
He looked up. Is Master Yoda awake yet?
No, Quinlan said. The healers aren't sure when he'll wake up, or if he'll wake up. He's old, he was very badly injured, and we don't really know anything about his species. From what I've heard, it's a near thing to a miracle that he's still alive, but that might just be hyperbole. Aside from the healers, only members of the High Council and Chancellor Dooku have been allowed to see him.
Obi-Wan's mouth twisted.
So they'll let Dooku see Yoda, but they won't tell him that I'm here. And the Council is lying to him about the Task Force leaving the Flotilla before it was destroyed.
Quinlan had been with him when they had heard about the ambush on the Gaius system.
I see the Order isn't particularly interested in whether or not the Supreme Chancellor trusts them.
Quinlan arched an eyebrow.
Dooku used to be a Jedi. He pretty much has to trust us.
I used to be a Jedi, Obi-Wan said. And I don't trust any of you farther than I could throw you without using the Force. Quinlan gestured at the holding cell.
Well, you kind of have a reason. Dooku kind of has a reason, Obi-Wan said, very dryly. Since you just told me the Council was lying to him about something that one could, perhaps, consider rather important, such as the survival of half the Jedi Council.
Quinlan glanced aside.
How are you doing?
He asked, changing the subject.
Obi-Wan rubbed a hand over his bruised jaw. How do you think I'm doing?
He asked.
I'm marked for death. No one knows I'm here. My queen is going to war without me there to protect her, and my head's so full of fog I can barely feel the Force.
You're not marked for death, Quinlan said half-heartedly, and saw Obi-Wan raise an eyebrow.
Don't tell me that you're still naive enough to believe that, Quinn. There are other cells in the temple. Even if the Council won't go so far as to actually execute me, they're hoping that if I stay in here long enough, I'll be driven to suicide, just like our friend.
He gestured at the graffiti.
That way I'll be dead and their hands will still be clean. Obi-Wan, you've been here 15 minutes and you're about ready to start climbing the walls, Obi-Wan said. How do you think I feel? How do you think I'll feel in a day? In a week? In a month, if I last that long? The Jedi have always wanted to keep their hands clean, but they're more than happy to let someone else do their dirty work.
Quinlan shook his head, but he could feel the aching absence of the Force gnawing at the inside of his head. He could almost sense it, just out of reach, but trying to grasp for it was like swimming through mud. If he looked away from Obi-Wan for more than a few seconds, he began to forget that he was there, that there was anything at all in the universe beyond his own misery. Without the Force. With a start, he jerked himself out of it.
Obi-Wan gave him a grim look. You see?
I see, Quinlan said. He ran a hand through his dreadlocks, trying to keep from shuddering. I wanted... Damn. It took him a moment to clear his head enough to remember why he had come down here in the first place.
He couldn't imagine how Obi-Wan could be taking everything so calmly. But he couldn't concentrate enough to touch the Force and find out if the inside of Obi-Wan's head was as much a mess as his was right now. Maybe living outside the Order for more than a decade had given Obi-Wan an advantage in something, at least. Obi-Wan waited patiently, twisting his wedding band around his ring finger. Quinlan thought that there might be a slightly frenetic edge to the gesture, but he couldn't tell if that was his imagination or not.
"I got the guards to let me in by telling them I was your advocate for your trial," Quinlan said, finally.
Obi-Wan's eyebrows shot up.
"Are you?"
he said, sounding surprised.
"What, you got someone else volunteering?"
"No," Obi-Wan said slowly.
"No, I don't. I didn't actually think I'd get anyone."
"Well, you got me," Quinlan said.
"Okay."
He shook his head, trying to clear out the fog.
"Usually Jedi who are accused of committing a crime, which using the dark side is, go up in front of the Council of Reconciliation."
"I know," Obi-Wan said. "Why do I have the feeling that that's not what the Council's planning for me?"
"Well, you're not exactly a Jedi, are you?" Quinlan said. "But you're not exactly not, either."
Obi-Wan gave him a look of sheer disbelief.
"I can't blasted well be both."
"Yeah, well, take it up with the Council. Obi-Wan, you're being tried as a dark Jedi, a renegade knight whose crimes are against the Force, the Order, and the Republic." Obi-Wan went pale behind his bruises, his hands clenching into fists.
"I wasn't a knight when I left the Order."
"They're charging you as one," Quinlan told him grimly.
"The charges, those are the charges. This isn't the Galactic Supreme Court or the Senate, Obi-Wan. This is the Jedi Order. He'll be tried by the full High Council."
"Except Eeth Koth and Yoda," Obi-Wan said, his voice scraping raw over the words.
"The Dark Woman and Jocasta Nu have been appointed proxy for them," Quinlan said. "Windu offered it to Thom and Thrasa, but they both refused. Syndralig and Vakara Che refused, too. A few others. I'm not sure who else."
Obi-Wan ran a hand back through his hair.
"So I'm on trial as something I'm not, for something I haven't done, while being illegally and secretly held prisoner against the direct orders of the lawful government of the Republic."
"When you put it like that, it sounds bad," Quinlan admitted.
"You don't say," Obi-Wan said flatly. "I'm fairly certain that at least one of the above counts as a violation of galactic law."
"The Order has jurisdiction over you," Quinlan said.
"Tradition."
Obi-Wan raised an eyebrow.
"If the Order is so certain that they'll keep jurisdiction, why haven't they told the Supreme Chancellor or the Senate?"
Quinlan grimaced.
"The Order's relationship with the Senate is a little tense right now," he said.
"Yes, I'm sure that having Queen Amidala's husband slit his wrists in the Jedi Temple will really improve matters," Obi-Wan said sharply.
"What else did you come here to tell me?"
It took Quinlan a moment to get his thoughts back together, pushing through the fog that had come crowding into his mind again.
"You're entitled to two more advocates," he said. "I don't know if there's anyone you want, or I can ask around."
"Thom and Plo Koon," Obi-Wan said immediately.
Quinlan felt his eyebrows shoot up.
"I'll ask Thom, but Master Plo is on the council. He isn't permitted to serve as an advocate."
"Thrasa, then," Obi-Wan said, after a moment's thought. "Or Aayla."
"She's not on Coruscant," Quinlan said.
For a moment, concern wove its way in through the fog, settling in the pit of his stomach. He hadn't heard from Aayla since she had been sent to Alderaan to spy on Queen Brea.
"I'll talk to Tra, and I'll tell Master Plo you asked for him."
"Thank you," Obi-Wan said.
Suddenly, he looked exhausted,
weariness settling inside his bones. And thank you for volunteering, Quinn. I do appreciate it. Quinlan chose his next words carefully. I know a little about the dark side, Obi-Wan, and I've been up in front of the Council of Reconciliation before.
Obi-Wan's eyebrows arched.
You have? Long story.
He waved it off with one hand.
What I mean to say is, I think I'd know if you were really a dark Jedi. I'd lay my life that you aren't. The Council should be able to tell that you aren't. Even little Ahsoka can tell you no more a darksider than I am. The fact that they're going through all this, the full Council, the kind of trials we haven't had since the last war, that they're treating you as a Jedi Knight at all, for save me, lying to Dooku about all of this? I don't like it. It's not right, and it's not the Jedi way. I'm not the only one who feels that way, but I'm probably the only one who's going to do anything about it. And the only thing I can do is this. So I'm doing it.
Obi-Wan studied him in silence for a few moments, his lashes fluttering, and then he said,
"Thank you."
Quinlan said, "Is there anyone else you want me to talk to? I know you've got contacts on Coruscant."
There was a beat of hesitation, and then Obi-Wan said, "I'm not that desperate yet."
The bath chamber in their suite was small by Naboo standards, but large by those of most other planets. It was a round, airy chamber with wooden screens at regular intervals around the walls, and a curving ceiling painted with a scene out of Naboo mythology. Vapor lamps illuminated the room, with a soft yellow light deepening the shadows. Sunk into the center of the room was a deep circular pool large enough for half a dozen people, currently covered with wooden panels. Padme padded over to the pool and pushed one of the panels back, checking the temperature of the water inside with a finger. Steam rose, hot against her skin, and she smiled, pulling the panel back into place. She returned to her room to change out of her handmaiden's half-robes, stripping to the skin before belting on a light linen dressing gown that skimmed the tops of her knees. Frowning at the mirror, she twisted her hair up into a knot at the back of her head, sliding a pair of carved wooden hair sticks in to hold it in place. Obi-Wan wasn't anywhere to be seen once she got back to the bathing chamber, the door sliding shut behind her, but the sound of splashing water from behind one of the wooden screens let her know that he was inside. Padme filled a small bucket from the bath, then carried it carefully to another screen, hanging her robe on a hook before she sat down on the low wooden stool. She washed and scrubbed quickly but thoroughly, splashing the hot water over herself with a long-handled cup, and watching it and the soap suds swirl down the drain. The floor tilted down around the outer rim of the room, and a gutter ran around the edge. Damp and dripping, she stood up and pushed a few loose curls back behind her ears. Raising her voice, she called, "I'm coming out," to warn Obi-Wan. The Naboo didn't have much of a nudity taboo, but she was aware that wasn't universally true, and it was always hard to tell how much of that sort of thing applied to Jedi anyway. Anakin was body shy, but Padme didn't know if that was just him, or if it applied equally to the rest of the Jedi. Obi-Wan made a noise of assent, and Padme took a deep breath, and walked out from behind the screen, leaving her robe on its hook. Obi-Wan had taken the panels off the top of the bath and stacked them neatly to one side. He was already in the sunken tub, his arms spread along the back of the curving wall, and Padme spared a moment to admire the muscles in his arms. He had his eyes closed, either from the heat or out of respect for her modesty. Either way, Padme found it charming, and she smiled a little to herself as she went around the side of the bath to descend the steps, hissing a little at the heat on her bare skin. She settled on one of the low benches that ran beneath the water all the way around the bath, stretching her legs out and tipping her head back. The water came up over her breasts, almost to the tops of her shoulders. "I missed this," she said, and saw Obi-Wan open one eye, cautious, than the other.
A trillion people on Coruscant, and not one of them can manage a really decent Naboo bath. None of the public bathhouses, even the really expensive ones, even come close. He smiled. An opening in the market. Maybe, Padme allowed. Or the best-kept secret in the galaxy. She cocked an eyebrow at him. Or maybe the second best. I can neither confirm nor deny that the Order has any secrets at all, Obi-Wan said with dignity. Then looked a little pained at the mention of the Jedi. Of course not, Padme said, pretending not to notice his reaction. I'm sure the Jedi are just as transparent as the Senate, especially when it comes to the press. This time, Obi-Wan actually did make a face, and Padme had to laugh, because she had seen his Holonet interviews. The Holonet liked him because he had already been mildly famous even before Geonosis, because he was handsome in a way that most humans and near-humans found pleasing, and because he was almost invariably polite, even in response to the most obnoxious questions. That, and because the Supreme Chancellor had conspired to make him and Anakin the darlings of the Republic, much to Obi-Wan's distaste, and Anakin's on-and-off annoyance, though occasionally he bounced through delight at the attention. In the wake of the Battle of Geonosis, all three of them had been bowled into a photo shoot and interview session with one of the biggest holonews stations in the Republic. Palpatine had insisted that it would humanize the war for both the public and the Senate. Padme suspected that he was just a sadist. Actually, come to think of it, he probably was. Had been. Or still was here. Despite the heat of the water, a chill went through her, and Padme began to shiver uncontrollably. She had never really understood what the Jedi meant when they talked about the dark side. In all likelihood, she would never be capable of understanding more than a fraction of it. But something inside her knew now, in a way that she had never done before. Ice swept through her body, a shadow taking hold of her mind, wrapping itself around her brain and stabbing tentacles like fishhooks around her soul. The world fell away from her. The bath, the room, the palace, the galaxy. And Padme floundered alone through the blackness of the universe. Fear closed her throat, grasping at her heart and squeezing. What are you? You will tell me, or you will live to regret it. The words drove into her mind, echoing in the hollow spaces of her skull, until there was nothing left but the sound that was not a sound, and Padme heard herself gasp, Padme! I'm Padme! I'm Padme! And then there was light. It pierced the darkness in her mind like a spear, driving the shadow before it. It had no color, or perhaps it was every color, or perhaps it was the searing blue of a lightsaber. The darkness fled before it, trying to hide in the shadowed corners of her mind before it was chased away. The light burned through her, melting the ice that had taken over her soul, ripping ichor-streaked claws into the tentacles that grasped at her spirit. Padme felt the battle inside her and couldn't contain her scream because it hurt, it burned, and there was nowhere to hide when the battleground was her very own soul. Visions flickered before her eyes, there and gone again too quickly for her to make out, and she had the distracted, hurried impression of two great beasts, fighting tooth and nail, one of unhallowed darkness that seemed to consume everything about it, and one of pure light that destroyed everything it touched, both of them so tangled up in each other that she could barely tell the one from the other. A whisper in her mind. Jedi. And a shout. You will not have her, Sith! She felt the shadow rally again, spinning out sticky webs of darkness that closed around her soul, and then the light blazed up and the fire burned through her, and Padme Amidala flung her head back and screamed. She didn't know how long it took her to come back to herself. When she did,
It was to shadows and darkness that made her shudder until she saw the single spark of light caught between Obi-Wan's forefinger and thumb. He had his other arm around her waist, bracing her against the wall of the bath, and his eyes were very wide and very blue in the dim light. A blood vessel had burst in his left eye, staining the white scarlet. "Padme," he whispered, "are you back with me?"
"What? What happened?"
Her voice sounded raw and distant, as though she hadn't spoken for a long time. He licked his lips.
"Palpatine left a trap in your mind, a back door. You must have sprung it somehow. I don't know how. I've never seen anything like that before."
"Is it gone?"
He nodded. "I destroyed it, but he knows I'm here now."
"It hurt," she told him.
It seemed important that she tell him that.
"I know," he said. "I'm sorry. I would have done it without any pain if I could have."
"What happened to the lights?"
she asked him, putting her hands carefully on the ledge she was sitting on to brace herself. She could feel the water around her, but it felt alien against her skin, and somehow that was distressing.
She was Naboo. Water should have been her life's blood.
Obi-Wan glanced up, then at the spark he was holding between his fingers.
"It's complicated,"
he said, visibly struggled for the words, and added,
"I borrowed them."
He looked upset for some reason, but Padme couldn't understand why.
"He's gone," she repeated.
"He's gone," Obi-Wan said.
"Can you sit up?"
Padme thought about it, resting her hands on the tiled ledge, then said,
"Yes."
He released her, his fingers slipping across her bare waist. Padme shivered a little at the loss, wanting his hands back on her body, wanting. Darkness rushed in at her, a net to contain her spirit, and wrapped icy fingers around her heart. She started to shiver again.
"He wanted..."
Obi-Wan cupped her cheek in one hand, his fingers curled against the back of her neck. Warmth spread from his touch, and she remembered that creature of light, tearing apart the darkness with gleaming claws.
"I know. I saw. I'm sorry."
Padme put her hands out, just to touch something real and warm and alive, and let them rest lightly on his chest. She could feel Obi-Wan's heart beating, and she wanted that, wanted the reminder that he was alive, that they both were.
"He's gone?"
she asked, for a third time.
"He is gone," Obi-Wan told her. "He can't come back. If he tries, I'll rip his heart out with my bare hands."
"Good," Padme said, and kissed him. Obi-Wan's mouth opened immediately against hers, his touch sending sparks dancing across her skin. Padme kissed him, hard and hungry, tasting the life and the light in him, and pulled him to her, wanting him closer, wanting him. He kissed her back, just as desperate as she was, his hands sliding across her body to rest on her waist, then lower. "Yes," Padme whispered, and nuzzled at his neck before sucking a bruising kiss into his skin. Obi-Wan hissed through his teeth, then lifted her up effortlessly as Padme wrapped her legs around his waist and her arms around his neck.
"Not in the bath," she breathed.
It was rude, she knew, though right now she couldn't quite remember why that was so important. Obi-Wan made a sound of assent, pressing kisses to her mouth, and somehow they got out of the bath without either of them slipping on the wet tile. After that, the floor seemed like a perfectly good idea, and Padme tugged Obi-Wan down against her. The tile was cool against her damp skin, but Obi-Wan was warm, hot even, as if he was on fire from the inside out, and despite the fact that his spark of light had gone out,
Padme wasn't afraid of the dark anymore.
They had ended up in bed at some point. Padme wasn't exactly sure when, or when she had fallen asleep, but she came awake all at once. She wasn't sure why at first, but eventually she recognized the faint shiver along her skin as electricity, like the supercharged air before a thunderstorm, except subtly wrong in a way she couldn't identify. Without opening her eyes, she started to reach for the blaster pistol she kept on her nightstand, before remembering that at some point during the evening's activities it had gotten knocked to the floor, and finally looked to see what was causing the disturbance. It was dark still. Moonlight spilled in through the window, leaving a bright bar across the floor and the foot of the bed. A shadowed figure stood just to one side of it, staring down at his cupped hands. Obi-Wan? He looked up, his face illuminated in a way that Padme couldn't ascribe to the moonlight. After a moment, she realized that the light was coming from between his hands.
Go back to sleep, he said quietly.
Instead, she sat up, wincing at how stiff she was, though some of those aches were more satisfying than the others. She had never managed to have a proper soak.
What is it?
It's... He stopped, squeezing his eyes shut. Apparently, for once, even he couldn't manage to brush off whatever it was. After a moment, he came back to the bed and sat down cross-legged beside her.
It's this.
A spark sprang up between his fingers, arcing between thumb and forefinger. It crackled a little, illuminating the space between them with clear white light. Obi-Wan glanced at it, then away, then back again, looking torn between fascination and horror.
What is it? Padme asked again.
He'd told her that he'd borrowed the light from the vapor lamps in the bath chamber, and this looked like the same thing, but that didn't account for his reaction.
He grimaced.
Force lightning. Ahsoka! Ahsoka had been up on tiptoe, reaching for a holofile stored in a high shelf, but at the cry, she came down and looked around for the speaker. Barriss, she said, as she saw the Mary Allen Padawan thudding her way through the shelves and the other Jedi glaring at the interruption. You know, if you keep yelling in the archives, Master Nu will throw you out. I'm sorry, Barriss said, coming to a halt beside her. I've just been looking for you everywhere, and you know what a maze this place is. Can we talk?
Of course, Ahsoka said.
Just let me... She straightened up onto her toes again, reaching up over her head for the holophile. The last time she had tried to use the Force to get one down, she'd brought the entire shelf crashing down on her, and had to be extricated by a frazzled-looking junior librarian. There was a reason that Master Plo kept telling her to work on her control. Barriss, who had a few inches on her, stretched up and snagged the holophile for her.
This one?
That's the one. Ahsoka took it from her gratefully, swiping it over the scanner at the end of the shelf to check it out before putting it in her bag with the others. Thanks. My master told me to pull all the records on trials for Dark Jedi and the Sith, but they're all from the Old Republic, and the ones that aren't restricted aren't exactly easy to get at.
So it's true, Barriss said,
lowering her voice as they made their way through the stacks back in the general direction of the entrance. At least Ahsoka thought it was the right way. The archives are one of the oldest parts of the temple, and were commensurately confusing. Most Jedi agreed that they were designed to weed out any younglings and padawans without a sense of direction.
Obi-Wan Kenobi really is here.
Ahsoka glanced around to make sure that they weren't being overheard, but all the other Jedi in the area seemed to be deeply involved in their own studies, some with the telltale blurring of privacy barriers around the corrals.
He's here, she told Barriss. We captured him in the Battle of Naboo.
Well, the Trade Federation captured him. We just captured the Trade Federation ship he was being held on.
I heard about what happened to the flotilla, Barris said. Everyone's talking about it. That and why the temple's on lockdown. Is he really that dangerous? Ahsoka thought about it. Not really, she said finally. He's just another Jedi. He seems nice, actually.
You've talked to him?
Barris said, sounding shocked.
Well, yeah. He was on 24-hour guard on the cruiser. Everyone took a turn, even Master Windu. But he really only talked to Master Quinlan, and to me and Master Plo, a little. I guess he and Master Quinlan used to be friends when they were Padawans.
Barris's mouth compressed into a thin, dark line.
Did he say anything about my master? She asked.
Oh. That explained why she was here. Ahsoka hesitated, but not telling her just seemed cruel. And besides, no one had actually ordered her not to talk about it.
He said that he didn't kill Master Luminara and Master Eeth, she said. That they're still alive, back on Naboo, and being held prisoner. He said that Queen Amidala would exchange them for him.
Barris shook her head, her relief trickling through the Force, but the gesture seemed to be more frustration than denial.
I knew she wasn't dead. I could feel it in the Force, but no one believed me.
They went around the side of a bookshelf, turning into a corridor that was dominated by the doleful bronzium statue of an Aqualish Jedi Master that Ahsoka didn't recognize.
Did he tell you if she was injured? Barris continued. I thought I felt something, but I wasn't sure. Naboo was so far away.
Ahsoka thought back to her conversations with Kenobi.
He had been willing to talk to her, and not to most of the other Jedi. She wasn't sure why. But that didn't mean he had exactly been forthcoming.
I think she or Master Koth might have been, she said doubtfully. He said something about them being given medical care and treated according to the laws of war.
That means that one of them must have been hurt, right?
It must, Barris said. She chewed on her lip for a moment as they took another turn, this time at a bust of a Togruta Jedi Ahsoka had always liked, then said decisively, I need to talk to him.
Ahsoka looked at her in surprise.
He's being kept in the high-security cells, she said. I didn't even know we had high-security cells. I mean, I don't think they're allowing him any visitors except for his advocates.
Barris cocked her head in silent inquiry.
Quinlan Vos, Tholm, and Trasa, Ahsoka explained. He asked for my master too, but Master Plo said that he'd do Captain Kenobi more good sitting on the council than as another advocate, since he'd have to give up his seat then, and they were already having trouble finding proxies for Master Yoda and Master Koth. That's why...
She patted her satchel, which clinked a little because of the holophiles inside.
Do you really think he's innocent? Barris asked.
She sounded genuinely curious, so Ahsoka gave it a few moments of thought as they walked down the row between two gleaming shelves of slightly dusty holophiles, the lights coming on above them as they advanced. Back here they were motion-activated, so as not to waste power in usually unoccupied sections of the archives. Ahsoka was pretty sure they might be going the wrong way, but Barris hadn't said anything about that yet, so maybe they weren't.
I think, she said finally, I think that the Council might be blowing this out of proportion. He is a traitor to the Republic. He's siding with Queen Amidala and the Confederacy and has been for years, even before Naboo seceded. And Master Plo said there's a really good chance he's Queen Amidala's personal assassin, since he's definitely done black ops work in the Republic. Master Quinlan said that he ran into Captain Kenobi once when they were both staking out the same arms deal a couple years ago.
Barris grimaced.
But... Ahsoka hesitated. I don't know. Everyone says that he's a traitor to the Order, too, but he resigned years and years ago. And maybe he chose the wrong side, but... He wasn't even a knight then. I looked up the records while we were on Paladin. He was still a Padawan when he resigned,
and everyone says that Padawans who leave the Order don't normally go bad the way most knights and masters who leave do. And he doesn't feel bad, the way I thought a Dark Jedi would. He's nice, she added lamely. Dark Jedi lie, Barriss said. Everyone knows that. I know, but Master Plo thinks he's telling the truth, Ahsoka said. So does Master Quinlan. And Master Thom and Master Saw think so too, because otherwise they wouldn't have agreed to be his advocates. And Master Thom and Master Quinn are both shadows, so it must be really hard to fool them. Barriss considered this in silence for a few minutes, until they finally turned into a road that had other Jedi in it. So maybe they weren't going completely the wrong way after all.
I need to talk to him, she finally said.
But you can't, Ahsoka pointed out. I don't even know where he's being kept, and if he's not being allowed visitors... My master is missing, Barriss said, her voice going harsh for a moment. Nobody is looking for her, and Captain Kenobi is the only person who knows where she is. The High Council isn't sending anyone to rescue her and Master Koth. They're too busy with the trial and the war. What if it was your master, Ahsoka?
When she put it like that, it wasn't much of a question.
All right, Ahsoka agreed. I'll try and find out where he is. My master isn't on the High Council. Maybe if I tell whoever the guards are that Master Plo sent me, they'll let us through. It wasn't exactly a good plan, but it was the best she could come up with on short notice.
Barriss nodded, looking relieved. Do you think we should ask Master Plo?
Let's see how hard it's going to be to get in first, Ahsoka said. They finally emerged into an area of the archives that she recognized, and she let out a sigh of relief. He might tell the rest of the council, and they'd definitely say no.
Probably, Barriss said glumly. I know Master Luminara always said you could trust the High Council, but they won't even let me go look for her. I know I could get on planet without anyone realizing I'm a Jedi, but Master Mundi and Master Galia said that it would be a suicide mission, and that they couldn't risk losing another Jedi. I hate disobeying the Council like this, but she's my master.
I get it, Ahsoka said. You're right, I'd do the same thing.
Barriss nodded again, her expression still faintly troubled. They were almost out of the archives when Ahsoka realized something.
You know who would probably help us talk to Captain Kenobi?
Barriss cocked an eyebrow at her.
Ahsoka smiled. Master Voss. It was raining when Anakin left RNSF Theed City, finally clearing away the smell of smoke and ashes that hung over the city ever since the bombardment. Anakin stood outside Hangar Esk, lifting his face up so that he could feel the rain on his skin. He had never seen rain until he had left Tatooine, and even 13 years later, it delighted him. The first time he had seen rain, he had been equal parts shocked and horrified, because it seemed like such a waste. Water was the most precious substance on Tatooine, and here it was falling from the sky and no one bothering to collect it. They had been on Naboo then, preparing for the assault on Theed, and the fact that the Naboo had been more annoyed than anything else at the rainfall had stunned him. To a desert child, it had felt like a miracle, a sign from the heavens that they would surely triumph. It still felt like that, even though by now Anakin should have known better.
Sir, we're ready to go now.
Anakin turned back to the RNSF soldier who had spoken, running a hand through his wet hair and flicking the water off the tips of his fingers. Another drop of water ran down the bridge of his nose and lingered until he shook his head to get it off. He saw the SF's stern face twitch for a moment in amusement, then she recovered herself and said, "This way, sir." They went around the side of Hangar Esk, where the damaged starfighters were kept and where Anakin had spent most of the night elbow deep in an NT-3 Starhawk tactical gunship. Since it had had a hole the size of his head in one of its twin engines, and a couple of other probably fatal war wounds, The RNSFC engineers had figured that, Jedi or not, he probably couldn't actually do the Starhawk any more harm, and they let him at it. He'd been so entranced by the beautiful thing that he had barely acknowledged Obi-Wan's departure sometime around nightfall, and only been dragged out of the gunship's guts several hours later to eat something by Rex, who was all too aware of Anakin's predilections when it came to engineering. Anakin yawned into his fist as he followed the SF to the waiting speeder, politely pretending not to notice the two more SFs that fell in behind him. He had caught a few hours of sleep, mostly by virtue of being so tired he had actually fallen asleep on the gunship's floor at several points, but was looking forward to taking a shower and sleeping in an actual bed. They might be in a prison, but at least it was a nice one. Ele, the handmaiden who had taken over guard duty from Kine and Mote sometime in the night, was already inside the speeder, reading something on a datapad. Anakin slid into the seat across from her, his boots leaving wet prints on the floor, and tipped his head against the window, watching the rain patter down on the bricks of the courtyard. The SFs followed him in, Ele absently scooting over on the bench to make room, and then they were off. Theed was beautiful in the rain. It was beautiful all the time, but Anakin liked it the best in the rain, especially at this hour. Everything went soft and misty, the city's bright colors muted, and everywhere the sound of running water, the pattern of the rain blending into the city's numerous rivers and their smaller tributaries. Naboo was a planet of water. Anakin would probably never get over how miraculous that was to him, that a world like this even existed. No matter how many spacer's tall tales he'd been told as a kid, he hadn't quite been able to shake the idea that every planet in the galaxy was just a variation on Tatooine, until he finally left. It wasn't a long ride back to the palace. They left the base and went through the city. Though the base bordered the palace, the direct route wasn't widely used except in emergencies, which Anakin supposed this wasn't. He didn't mind. He liked Theed, and he hadn't seen much of the city since the day of the bombardment, given that he had spent the majority of the past few days locked in their guest suite under guard. L.A. and the SF stuck with him all the way back through the residency, which was quiet at this hour, and deposited him at the door to the suite. Anakin saw them off with a quick salute, which made L.A. roll her eyes. Unlike Motier, she seemed to like him and hadn't slapped him, so right now she was his favorite handmaiden. And the SFs almost smiled. He slipped back inside, yawning again, and automatically reached out through the forest to check on Obi-Wan and Padme. He was almost getting used to actually fighting his way through the haze of his burnout to sense things again, though it was a struggle every time. And at least it didn't drop him screaming in agony to the floor anymore. Padme, force-blind as she was, he could barely sense. He could tell she was here, but nothing more. Obi-Wan was an easier touch, and Anakin frowned at the distress that trickled down through their bond. It couldn't be... Like blazes, you know what's going through his head anymore, Skywalker. You didn't see any of this coming. Frowning, he pulled his wet boots off and left them in the narrow entryway. The sitting room was empty, but the balcony doors were open. Anakin could see Obi-Wan sitting on the balcony floor, probably getting pneumonia from the downpour since he wasn't using the Force to keep the rain off. Anakin put a hand on the doorframe and leaned out to say, "Hey, you know it's raining, right?" Obi-Wan blinked and tipped his head back to look up at him. There was blood in one eye. "You're back." "I'm back," Anakin said. "And you're getting wet. That can't be healthy." He offered Obi-Wan his hand, registering the moment of hesitation before he took it and let Anakin pull him to his feet. The contact gave Anakin the briefest flash of something in the Force, the warm slide of a woman's skin against his own, and Anakin blinked in surprise before Obi-Wan released him. "Did I miss something?" Obi-Wan ran his fingers through his damp hair, frowning at his wet clothes. Anakin wondered how long he had been sitting out there. Then the thought was driven out of his head as Obi-Wan said,
"Palpatine tried to strip Padme."
"He what?"
"She's fine," he added quickly. "He won't try that again."
Anakin stared at him in horror, all his exhaustion wiped away in his need to go to her, to make sure for himself that she was safe and that her mind was still her own, that her mind was still there. "I should have been here," he said. "If she... What did he... How?" Too many questions, all at once, and Anakin didn't know which one to ask first.
"She's fine," Obi-Wan repeated, his tone soothing,
though there was an edge to it that Anakin couldn't interpret.
"There's no permanent damage. I don't know how he did it from a distance, but he must have left a trap in her mind when he tried to interrogate her. It's gone now. She isn't hurt."
"He tried to strip her?" Anakin said, still caught on that. Stripping was obscene. It was the kind of thing he had only ever heard about in histories of the Old Republic. Not even Dooku had tried it on any of his captives. To break open someone's mind and rip away all their personality, their entire soul, everything that made someone a person and not just a sack of meat. It was the worst kind of crime a Force user was capable of committing. It was the only crime Anakin knew of that even the Jedi would punish with death. Though that penalty hadn't been meted out in centuries.
"He tried. He failed," Obi-Wan said.
He was watching Anakin warily, his arms crossed over his chest, as though trying to keep himself from reaching out.
"Padme wasn't harmed, just shaken."
Anakin swallowed, looking away from him toward the bedrooms.
"You stopped him?"
Obi-Wan nodded, and in the Force, Anakin felt the faint echo of his distress, muted and distorted. He couldn't imagine what that had been like. He'd fought Palpatine for his own mind and lost, but to fight for Padme's soul, with her spirit as a battleground? It was a nightmare he'd never even considered before today.
"Thank you,"
Anakin said fervently, resisted the urge to hug him in relief, and added,
"I'm going to check on her."
Obi-Wan's gaze flickered up.
"He knows I'm here now," he warned.
"Yeah, that's not going to matter after I cut his heart out," Anakin said. He didn't wait to see Obi-Wan's reaction to that. Padme's bedroom door was shut. Anakin knocked on it, waiting for a response that didn't come before he opened it. He could hear the shower running in the refresher, which explained why Padme hadn't answered the door. The room was a mess. A lamp had been knocked over on one nightstand, a glass on the other. Padme's blaster lay forgotten on the floor next to the bed, alongside the Ouroboros half out of its silk wrap. The sheets were a tangled rope on the bed, and the windows were open, letting in the fresh smell of the rain outside. Anakin walked over to sit down on the corner of the bed, rubbing a hand over the back of his neck. If they hadn't been fighting, he would have just gone into the fresher to make sure she was all right. But he had the feeling that Padme wouldn't appreciate that right now. And she had a good right hook. He couldn't sense any of the detritus of Palpatine's attempt to strip Padme, but he hadn't expected to. It was Obi-Wan and Padme he had connections to, not Palpatine. Or, at least, not this Palpatine. If it had been the other Palpatine, the one he'd murdered in the Senate building, then maybe. But as far as he knew, this one had never met Anakin Skywalker. In the fresher, the shower shut off. Anakin waited patiently, playing with his lightsaber hilt, and trying to pick the engine grease out from under the nails of his left hand. At least that wasn't something he had to worry about with his right. Until the door slid open. Padme was wearing a fluffy white robe and still toweling her hair dry, but she froze when she saw him.
"Annie?" she said uncertainly.
Anakin stood up and went over to her.
"Hey,"
he said, as she put down the towel she had been using on her hair. He caught a hint of something from her in the Force, but couldn't quite tell what it was. Obi-Wan told me what happened.
He what?
Her eyes went wide.
He told you?
Of course he told me. He reached for her, but she stepped back out of his grasp.
He wouldn't keep something like that from me.
Padme said.
I thought we'd have a chance to talk about it first.
What is there to talk about?
Ani, I just didn't know how you'd take it.
Anakin threw his hands up in frustration.
How did you think I'd take it?
I don't know, Padme exclaimed. That's why I wanted to talk to him before we told you.
Palpatine tried to strip you. What else is there to talk about?
She stared at him, her mouth slightly open. Oh, she said. That.
Yeah, that,
Anakin said blankly.
What did you think I was talking about?
Her gaze flicked over his shoulder, and Anakin glanced back to see Obi-Wan standing in the doorway, looking worried.
That wasn't surprising. Obi-Wan looked worried most of the time.
But there was something about his expression.
What?
Anakin demanded, hearing that ugly edge in his voice again, the one he hated. Padme said, Obi-Wan and I slept together.
Anakin stared at her, his mind gone completely blank for a precious few seconds, as he tried to get his head around what he had just heard, tried to push the words together into something that made sense.
What? He said.
I don't... What? He hadn't been expecting that. He didn't know what he had been expecting, but it hadn't been that.
He shook his head, more in an attempt to jar some kind of reaction aside than in denial, and said again,
What?
Padme looked up at him worriedly, then reached out with one hand to touch his arm.
Please don't overreact, she said. You what?
Anakin repeated. For a moment, he felt fury threaten to uncoil in the pit of his stomach, heard the seductive whisper of the Force as it slid through his veins, and in another life he might have given in to the temptation, because it had been so long since he had been about to touch the Force without pain. In another life he wouldn't have hesitated. In another life he hadn't. He stepped away from Padme, out of her reach, and felt the faint flash of her alarm as a shimmer across the surface of the Force.
You and Obi-Wan, you...
Ani, the Force whispered, you know what you want to do. Anakin looked away from Padme so that he wouldn't be tempted, sinking down onto the bed with his head in his hands. She dropped to her knees in front of him, reaching for his hands.
Anakin, please, it doesn't mean what you think it means.
Don't touch me,
he said, then winced at the sound of his own voice. The words had come out choked off, heavy with the Force to his ears.
I might hurt you.
Padme drew her hands back, but didn't move away. I don't believe you, she said. Ani, let me explain.
Let me get Obi-Wan.
The last person that Anakin wanted to see right now was Obi-Wan. But somehow he wasn't surprised to hear Obi-Wan say, I'm here, from the direction of the door. He would have felt the disturbance in the Force and come to put me down like a rabbit in Nuba in case I slipped, Anakin thought, and almost wanted to laugh. He would have found the idea a relief if he'd thought even for a moment that Obi-Wan would have been able to strike the killing blow. Obi-Wan hadn't even been able to kill Vader, not after he'd found out the truth. Padme's gaze flickered up towards Obi-Wan, and in the slant of her body and the indistinct murmur of the Force, Anakin read what had passed between them. It wasn't the revelation it maybe should have been.
I knew,
he choked out.
I guessed I...
What? Padme said, startled. Ani, She reached for him again, and he snarled.
Don't touch me!
She caught his hands anyway, and he flinched, waiting for the force to react, and knowing that he might not be able to hold himself back if it did. Her grip was warm on his, her skin still a little damp from her shower, and she said, Ani, you can shout at me if you want, I'll understand. He tried to snatch his hands back, but she held on.
I don't want to, he said,
vaguely aware of Obi-Wan coming over to them, the weight of his presence in the Force more comforting than Anakin would have expected, under the circumstances. He might not be able to strike the killing blow, but at least Anakin knew that Obi-Wan would put him down hard if he had to.
I want you to be happy, he said. Even if it's not with me.
Especially if it's not with me.
It isn't like that, Padme said sharply. Anakin, I love you. You know that. Well, you shouldn't, Anakin snapped, then bit his lip, searching for the words. Look, I get it, okay? I get it. I was gone, and I wouldn't want me either. I don't.
Padme's face did something complicated, her grip tight on his. Anakin, I love you, she said. We both do. You have to know that.
Why?
He demanded, his voice rising, and felt the Force shiver. Something exploded with a crashing sound, making all three of them wince.
I am poison! I destroy everything I touch! I don't even want to be me! Why would she...
Anakin! Obi-Wan's voice was shocked. He started to reach for him, stopping with his fingertips just beyond Anakin's shoulder. Anakin could have laughed, and he almost choked on it.
You know it's true. Perfect Master leaving the Order? What that means?
It was almost too much to think about, because for a knight or a master, leaving the Order was walking straight into the teeth of the Dark Side and hoping they could come out the other side with their soul intact. Most Jedi would kill themselves rather than risk that.
What kind of rot is inside me that you would do that?
Anakin, that was my choice, Obi-Wan said, concern in his voice and in the Force.
Because of me! Don't tell me you would ever even have considered it if I had never...
You know that isn't true, Obi-Wan said quietly. Padme's grip tightened on his hands. Ani, we don't believe that. No one in their right mind could believe that. Why would you...
You saw Vader, Anakin said. You know what he... What I can't be that. I won't be that. I can't.
Anakin, you are not Darth Vader, Obi-Wan said swiftly. And he actually sounded like he believed it.
Yes, I am. I could be. And I will fall on my lightsaber before I...
Even thinking about it made him feel sick. He didn't want to think about it, but the possibility was right there, whispering seductively, and he could actually taste the memory of the slaughter in the Jedi Temple in the Force, a sourness like rotten blood in his mouth. He gripped Padme's fingers with his own and told her, trying to keep his voice calm, I would rather lose you than risk that.
Why do you think you're losing me? Because it isn't safe, Anakin said, a little desperate to make her understand. I'm not safe, and if you have the chance to have someone better, someone who won't... I don't want someone better, Padme exclaimed. I only want two men, and none of that means you're losing me, Annie.
He jerked his head up to stare at her.
What?
I love you, Anakin, she said, squeezing his hands for emphasis.
Even when you're being an idiot.
I love you, and I trust you, and I believe you're better than you think you are, even when you don't think so.
You don't know. No, I don't. That's what trust is. That's what love is. You can barely look at me. I can be angry with you and still love you, Anakin. You slept with Obi-Wan!
Yes, I did, Padme said,
red tinting her cheeks. And I'm sorry you had to find out like that. I wanted to tell you differently. But that doesn't change anything. I don't love you any less. Love and desire aren't finite, Annie. I can love both of you. I can want both of you. And that doesn't make what we have any less real. It doesn't mean that my feelings for you don't exist anymore. I can love you and Obi-Wan, Anakin.
Anakin stared at her. Obi-Wan made a faint, shocked sound, his surprise echoing in the Force strongly enough that it penetrated Anakin's burnout. So, apparently, he hadn't been expecting that either.
Padme glanced between them, her blush darkening, and said, "I know you love me. I know you love Obi-Wan. You don't have to choose between us. None of us do."
"It doesn't work like that," Anakin choked out, feeling bizarrely scandalized.
"Why? Why not? I'm Naboo. It does work like that for us. There's nothing wrong with it."
"It just doesn't."
He looked at Obi-Wan for support, but Obi-Wan's face had completely shut down, and without reaching into the Force, Anakin had no idea what was going through his head. Besides surprise, presumably.
"Obi-Wan, tell her," he said. "About Vader. About what he..."
"I can't."
He was tempted. By the Force, he was tempted. And for a few heartbeats, he would have given anything to have what Padme was offering.
"She knows," Obi-Wan said quietly, with a faint edge to his voice.
"I told her."
Anakin looked at Padme in agony, and finally pulled his hands free of hers.
She let him, her eyes huge and worried.
"I can't be him," he said. "I can't. I won't. I can't risk it."
He dragged his hands through his hair, trying not to clutch at it.
"I can't. Padme, Obi-Wan, he killed you."
Padme drew her breath in. So Obi-Wan hadn't told her everything. Obi-Wan's knuckles brushed against his cheek, making Anakin flinch. Then he tipped Anakin's chin up with two fingers. Anakin stared up at him, hoping that Obi-Wan could read him through the Force, hoping that he understood. He had to understand. He was a Jedi too.
"Anakin, you are not him," Obi-Wan said. "It won't happen. I promise you, I will not allow it to happen."
"You can't promise me that," Anakin said.
"Neither can you," he added to Padme.
"You couldn't stop him. Stop me. No one could. I can't."
He slashed a hand through the air, searching for the words he wanted.
"I'm not like you. I'm not good enough. I'll never be good enough."
"There is no such thing as good enough," Obi-Wan said sharply.
"I don't... We don't."
His gaze slid towards Padme, and for an instant Anakin felt his uncertainty.
"We don't want you to be anyone but who you are, Anakin."
"Well, I'm afraid of who I am,"
Anakin shouted, his voice cracking on the last syllable.
"I know what I am, Obi-Wan, and it terrifies me. I saw I can't do it. I want it, but I can't. I won't."
"Annie," Padme begged, "this isn't about Vader."
Anakin got to his feet, pacing back and forth and dragging his fingers through his hair.
"Yes, it is. You don't..."
He closed one hand into a fist, then opened it again, forcing his voice to something near calm as he turned to face them. He was a Jedi Knight. He ought to be better at this.
"It is. It has to be. I saw what he did. No one made him do it. He did it, which means I could... I can't compromise what I am, what I could be, for what I want. I thought I could. He thought he could.
But I can't. I won't. You're right. I love you. I love you both. I want you. But I can't do it. I won't risk it. I fought too hard to stay Anakin Skywalker to risk putting Darth Vader into the world again.
He swallowed, licking his lips.
This has to be about Vader, he said. It has to be about Vader because he used to be me. Because he lives under my skin.
He felt his fingers flex again, resisting the urge to try and claw the darkness out from within him.
I'm not the Jedi I thought I was. I'm not the man I thought I was. I wish I was, but I'm not. And I can't be. And I won't ever be. And I want...
His voice broke for a moment with longing.
But I'm not like you. I'm not good enough to want and have. I never will be. I wish I was. I used to think I was. But it's too dangerous for me to get what I want.
Anakin, Padme whispered. She straightened up and reached for him, but he shifted, avoiding her outstretched hand.
You should be together, he said, forcing the words out. You'd be good together. You deserve to be happy.
It isn't like that. Anakin shook his head, unable to meet her eyes, or Obi-Wan's.
I'm sorry, he said.